This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:03. It's great to have you with us for the Thursday edition of the Noon Business Hour. I'm Cisco Cotto, getting ready tomorrow to wrap up that trading week. We have some snow falling in Chicagoland, several inches of accumulation, especially on non-paved areas before it is all done. Some, though, not seeing much of this snow sticking really at all. Technology Thursday, more and more robots being used in stores. How to protect your privacy. Apple revenue and earnings. Top analyst estimates despite lighter than expected iPhone sales. We'll cover that in our next segment. Right now, an update on U.S.-China trade plus several key economic reports are out today. To talk about it and give us some insight, we're joined by Andrew Bush, former Chief Markets Intelligence Officer at the Commodity Futures Trading Commission, political economist online at andrewbush.com. Andy, are we seeing some positive movement here on U.S.-China trade?
Well, we were supposed to have an agreement next month, but the APEC conference where they were going to sign it got canceled. So the president and the Chinese have to get together and figure out where they can sign some agreement. But today there were some Chinese officials out expressing concerns and doubts about their ability to reach a comprehensive long-term trade deal with the U.S. despite this progress. And this is something you and I've talked about for a long time. It's going to be much harder to do a longer term, bigger picture trade agreement. And the reason why is there's three tracks to this thing. Number one is the unfair trade practices, right? That's like the Super 301 tariffs that we put on. That's not allowing our companies to sell products into China like financial services. Then there's the security track, which is the Huawei and 5G stuff. And then finally, there's a human rights track where the U.S. has blacklisted technology companies in China for what's gone on in Hong Kong and with the Uyghurs. So that gives you an understanding of how complicated this is. So we're going to get something, but it's not going to be some grand big deal that both sides are going to be happy with.
And are you surprised that the president would agree to sort of, at least initially, whether you call it phase one or a partial deal or however you term it,
right,
given the fact that it seems so far like it was everything or nothing in a deal?
Yeah, you know, a lot of that is blustering during trade negotiations. But for farmers in the Midwest, like, I don't want to put this down at all, because if it's true that they're going to get $50 billion worth of agricultural products sold to China in the agreement, that's great news. But again, it's the time frame. Is it in 1 year? Well, that would be a big deal because we export about $150 billion of ag products overall. So $50 billion would be huge. Is it 2 years? Is it 3 years? Is it 5 years? And then it's not so important. But still, there's some goodies in there for the Midwest.
Yeah, and certainly, yeah, you're right. All those farmers certainly interested in it. Does this impeachment inquiry, a formal vote held by the House today, does that at all play into this and whether or not you get a deal done?
No, I don't think so. I think actually this is good news for the markets, if you can believe it. It's counterintuitive, but it puts the process in a formal basis, right? So you're going to get timelines on this thing. I expect a vote in the House by the end of the year. And I think the Senate will take it up as quickly as possible and talk about when they're going to have a trial for the president and go through with that. But my guess is that this is actually a good thing. You're going to see more information come out that's not as detrimental to the president from the Republicans as they gain access to the information. So overall, I don't see this thing as anything but what it is. It's a political act. We're probably going to get through it. It's going to be ugly for a long time, though.
Thanks so much, Andrew Bush, political economist online. You can find him at andrewbush.com. Strength in wearables has boosted Apple to a better-than-expected quarter. The stock is up right about 5% today. Let's see what's going on with Apple. Mark Gurman is joining us, an Apple reporter with Bloomberg based in Los Angeles. Mark, as you take a look through Apple's announcement, what do you make of what's going on with the company?
Yeah, you know, it's very interesting. Investors and analysts are very much receptive to the announcement Wednesday about their fourth quarter earnings results. But the big picture that I think a lot of people are missing is that iPhone revenues are down 9% on an annual basis for the fourth quarter. This is the iPhone launch quarter. And so despite big reception to these new iPhone 11, iPhone 11 Pro, Pro Max models, you know, sales are still down, right? On the other hand, services and wearable devices like the AirPods and the Apple Watch seem to be making up some of the slack. So overall revenues for the company are still up slightly, a couple billion dollars, and that's primarily due to big improvements in the Americas region, which is like the U.S., Canada, and Mexico specifically.
Yeah, so are we seeing margins just tighter on the iPhones where Apple's just not able to make enough or as much money off of the phones?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, we're talking about revenue specifically, so the margins don't really come into place for these specific metrics.
Sure.
I think margins personally are higher than ever, given their much higher prices. And if you look at the iPhone specifically, right, last year the concern was not iPhone revenues dropping. The concern was iPhone unit sales dropping, and they made up for that by, you know, moving up revenues by increasing the prices by $300, $400 on the base models, right? Now you're $1,000 for the Pro phones. But now you have revenue dropping as well. So that's why I think it's so concerning. And that means they're really needing to have big improvements over the course of the next few years on wearables and services, plus a new product to sort of augment that in order to see success be sustained for the next 5 years.
And that's where it seems as though wearables really are taking off, Apple getting a lot more in sales. And is there more to it than just the sales of wearables? Is there data that Apple can monetize from these wearables?
Yeah, no, that's a good point. It doesn't appear to have anything additional, right? The thing with the iPhone is that it was basically a hub where all these services can function. But wearables, you know, you can't really subscribe to services on these wearables, right? I mean, I guess Apple Music works with the Apple Watch, but beyond Apple Music on just one product, and that product is reliant on the iPhone anyways. I mean, you can't juice revenue out of the wearables like you can out of the iPhone. So they're kind of stuck until the iPhone has a resurgence or until people start buying whatever Apple's next big thing is that is a services hub.
Do they also have to hope for more? You talk about services, whether it's Apple Music or the new streaming service. Do they have to hope that there's revenue to be gained in those areas?
Exactly, right. But you need a device in order to run those services on. So it's sort of like a cycle here where everything is interconnected and everything relies on each other. And they're saying that, you know, they're trying to, you know, push the services, right? But the services are tied to the phone anyways. So you really need that phone to function and keep selling in order to get as much services revenue as possible. And that's the conundrum for them, right? Like they talk about wearables, they talk about services, but again, it all comes back to the phone because you can't buy AirPods without an iPhone, can't buy an Apple Watch without an iPhone, and you can't use any of these lucrative services without an iPhone either. So the iPhone is the most important product for Apple, regardless of what anyone says.
Good analysis and info. Thank you. Mark Gurman, Apple reporter at Bloomberg, based in Los Angeles. The stock today up about $5. It's up right about 2%. Up next, an update on the financial fortunes of Facebook.
Investing 60 minutes each weekday toward planning for the future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Facebook impresses on its earnings call, and the shares are rising today, up about 2%. Let's find out how they're doing. Jeff Kilberg is joining us, CEO of KKM Financial here in Chicago. Jeff, what are you making out of Facebook's report?
Well, Cisco, it's a bright spot today. Yes, tough tape in the market. You've seen the S&P 500 down nearly 1%. But Facebook, the third quarter earnings, they beat by 21 cents, which means, Cisco, that's a 20% jump year over year. And the revenue for the quarter, nearly $17 billion, that's another big jump, about 28% year over year. So, Cisco, I'm going to give you a little tidbit to make you sound even smarter tonight at your Halloween party. But the MAUs, that's what Facebook really focuses on. That's the monthly active users. That's about 2.5 billion people. That indeed is up 8% year over year. So you're seeing this growth in Facebook. It's really interesting to see Asia Pacific is actually the fastest growing market in the quarter. Over in India, you saw about 12% year over year growth, about 627 million daily active users over there, DAUs. So this is really encouraging for Facebook shareholders as it tries to fight off some of the political headwinds and all the different political noise you've seen beat up the stock.
I am going to embarrass my kids tonight by bringing that up as I'm handing out candy on the porch just to make them say, what are you talking about, Dad? MAUs. But it's really what Facebook cares about, and it's what Wall Street cares about.
That's right. And the daily active users is really interesting. That's about 1.6 billion people a day. And what's really interesting in the whole Facebook family, because you have to remember, Cisco, inside this Facebook family of apps, there is Facebook, of course, but there's WhatsApp. There's also Instagram, and then there's Messenger. So there's 2.2 billion people a day. That's the DAUs, the daily active users, inside the Facebook family of apps, and they're continuing just to grow that. So I think it's really interesting to understand that a lot of people, maybe the younger generation, aren't on Facebook, but they're on Instagram. I know my boys are on Instagram, and they love it.
Yeah, just astonishing, really, the reach of it. All right, recommendation on the stock?
Well, I think you have to look at the technicals, right? Whenever you see euphoria, this is the bright spot in the market today. So right now, as it's trading 192, understand that the 50-day moving average is 187. So you have some support there. But it looks like it has the ability, the trajectory, to take out that $208 high. So if you're long it, stay long, Cisco.
Thanks so much. Always good analysis. Jeff Kilburg, CEO, KKM Financial here in Chicago. Still ahead, Technology Thursday, the rise of robots in retail and how to protect your information.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Cisco Cotto. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. More retailers are relying on robots to perform in-store tasks. We'll learn the latest. It's Technology Thursday. On this Halloween, we discuss an important survey that reveals the worst candies to give trick-or-treaters. A dispute over makeup days is holding up resolution of the Chicago teachers' strike. A sharply divided U.S. House has approved rules for its impeachment inquiry of President Trump. On Wall Street, pretty much down all around. The Dow is down 212 points. The NASDAQ is down 30. The S&P is down 16. Oil down a little more than 1.5%. The snow continues falling. Some areas seeing a few inches, especially north and west of the city. A high today of 34 degrees. Overnight, a low of 21 degrees. Good news, though, tomorrow, high of 40 with lots of sunshine. The Noon Business Hour is presented by the Village of Bedford Park. Markets are slumping today. Let's find out why. Art Hogan is joining us, Chief Market Strategist at National Securities, based in New York. Art, what's going on Wall Street today?
Yeah, a couple of things. So remember that we hit an all-time high yesterday in the S&P 500 that was on the heels of a Fed decision that gave the market pretty much everything they wanted. It was a relatively dovish in the commentary coming out, although they're probably not going to move from the rate that they're at now for a while. They're not going to raise anytime soon. I think today we came in, and the two things that really hit markets, some Chinese officials had warned overnight, and it's a Bloomberg story that came out here this morning pretty early, about 5 o'clock, that some of the more difficult issues are going to be hard for them to move on. So the longer-term deal with U.S. and China on trade probably are still going to have some pretty high hurdles getting around things like intellectual property theft, forced technology transfer, and the ability to open up a equal joint venture in China. So that caused some concern. And at the same time, we know that the where this phase one deal was going to be signed was at a conference that's now canceled in Chile. And we're looking for another place for the two presidents to meet and at least get the phase one deal behind us. And then the third thing that kind of hit us is at about 9:45, we had the Chicago PMI that came out for October, reading a 43.2. Street was looking for 48, now it's versus 47 in September. So combination of those three things after making all-time highs yesterday, dragging the market down a little bit here today. And that's kind of the story here on a Thursday, coming under pressure in the U.S.-China trade, which had been seen as getting better, sort of hit the skids a little bit here.
Yeah, and phase one, I mean, I'm just wondering, even if that gets signed and we get more details about what's in it, just wondering if that'll really move Wall Street, or they want a comprehensive deal.
Well, I tell you, what the market wants is no more escalation. So what phase one would do would stop that escalation. What does that mean? It means we're not going to go into December thinking we're getting more tariffs. We're not going to increase the current tariff. So phase one basically means, hey, let's stop the escalation and we'll buy more of your stuff. And that's exactly what the market wants. They'd like this to remain static, not dynamic. They'd like to de-escalate, not escalate. And so, yeah, the street would celebrate getting this phase one deal behind us because it takes some of the unknown away. And that unknown is how large do these tariffs get and how many more things do we find the tariff? I think that would be a good sign. And I think we're close to that. I think in the long term, it's going to be a very long road to get a comprehensive deal done. And that probably happens somewhere in the middle of 2020, if ever.
We would love your thoughts on a couple of story stocks. First one is Kraft Heinz. Market seems to love their report. Stock up almost 13% today.
Yeah, amazing story here. In a company that's literally been down about 67% over the last 3 years, the company is trading at $95 at the beginning of 2017, trading at $32 today. That's up 13% on better than expected earnings. It's got a new management team in. They're really trying to pivot this company. They've probably got a long way to go. Remember, even with today's increase, it's down 25% year to date and down 40% over the last 12 months. It's stuck in that category of the sort of staples that consumers are changing their taste on. So they're really trying to reinvent themselves. They've got a long way to go, but certainly a step in the right direction by beating earnings today.
Another one, Altria, really interesting that they seem to have been troubled by Juul.
Yeah, it's interesting. So the reason Altria would get into Juul is obviously how much market share would vaping take from traditional tobacco smoking. And, you know, all of that made sense until Juul all of a sudden became red hot with controversy and causing a great deal of illnesses and deaths. So now they've got an ownership stake in Juul and they have to sort of figure out what that's worth. And as the company's prospects, Juul's prospects continue to diminish, Altria took a $4.5 billion hit against its ownership, announced that during the earnings. Stock's down 2%. Understand the stock's down about 9% year to date, but in the last 12 months, the stock is down about 25%. So this is something relatively expected because we've heard the Juul story almost every day for the last 2 months, but today was the official announcement of just how big the hit was going to be for Altria.
Yeah, really fascinating to see how that's just risen and then fallen now. We'll see how it goes going forward. Art Hogan, Chief Market Strategist at National Securities. Thanks for being with us. Up next, it's Technology Thursday. We track the increasing use of robots in retail environments. How do you protect your privacy?
WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's Technology Thursday here on the Noon Business Hour, sponsored by Geiger Wealth. This afternoon, we're exploring the increased implementation of robotic help in retail settings. We're joined by Stephen Keith Platt, director of the Platt Retail Institute in Hinsdale and research director of the Retail Analytics Council at Northwestern University. Good to have you back on the show. When we talk about robots, kind of explain that to us, because I think people hear robots and they literally think of physical robots sort of wandering around the store, but it's not always that way.
Good afternoon, Cisco. Thank you so much. No, it's not primarily that. It's a robot automation processing, which doesn't have a physical embodiment. But in fact, the conference we have today up at Northwestern is, in fact, about robots being deployed in physical environments to perform a variety of functions.
And it is becoming, the use is just increasing because there's added efficiencies and other benefits to the companies.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, robots are doing jobs that people don't want to do. It enables the retailer to free up staff to work doing more value-added tasks like working with customers. So at Walmart, for example, Cisco, there's approximately 1,500 autonomous floor cleaning robots, 250 what's known as shelf audit robots. The Ahold stores on the East Coast have about 450 bots deployed looking for spill hazards on the floor. So robots are coming to a store near you.
And in general, I mean, as you say, it's not necessarily that they're going to put people out of work. It may be just that people are doing other jobs, maybe more people doing those other jobs.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there's a lot of unfortunate, I would say, misinformation about that that's really not helpful, that robots are displacing humans. In fact, the industry itself is creating thousands and thousands of jobs, and it's helping relieve humans of doing jobs they don't really want to be doing in the first place. And with labor being tight, some of these stores can't find people to do the work.
And so, yeah, so for the stores, it's literally a matter of if we could find someone to pay to do this, we would. We just can't.
Right. It's a very tough job market right now. But so you're going to start seeing more and more of this. The purpose of our conference today at Northwestern is, like with any emerging industry, Cisco, there's a lack of standards around robots. So robots communicating with each other in a store environment. So the robot that's picking a fill order, communicating to the autonomous delivery bot when it should come, et cetera, et cetera. There's no real industry standards yet. And for any industry to be successful, a technology industry, there's a need to have standards. So we have a group of leading manufacturers gathered today up on campus at Northwestern to try to start exploring data standards and what we call bot-to-bot communication protocols.
Yeah, privacy, obviously, something that a lot of people are concerned about. Any concerns that are legitimate, especially for the customers in these places?
You know, privacy is always, always of utmost importance, and it's something companies really take super, super seriously. With the bots that are currently deployed, they're really not doing any facial detection. They're not doing any biometrics today. It's scanning a shelf, and it has a radar system, a LIDAR system that makes sure it doesn't bunk into anybody. But there's absolutely no biometrics today. Do I see that changing where they will have a lot of biometrics in the future? Absolutely. Illinois probably has the toughest law in the country on biometrics, and it's something we don't need the government to tell us this is something super important that we need to be very concerned about, and we are.
Yeah, I just have this picture of a bot scanning me before I walk into the store to decide how much I'm going to spend and whether or not it's going to allow me in.
You watch too many movies, Cisco. That is, I promise you, that's not coming for a long time. And if ever did, because we have played around with facial pay, which I think is a pretty cool thing, but the reality is we'd never do it unless you authorized it in advance.
All right. I'll take your word for it. Thank you. Always good to have you on the show. Stephen Keith Platt, director of the Platt Retail Institute and research director of the Retail Analytics Council at Northwestern University, joining us on Technology Thursday. This time tomorrow, Entrepreneur Friday, still to come. Comparing notes on the worst Halloween candies.
Cashing in with conversation. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The National Retail Federation estimates Americans will spend more than $2.5 billion on candy this Halloween. Not all of it is good. A new study tracks the worst Halloween candies. Let's talk about it. Boy, this is hotly debated. Phil Lempert is joining us, founder of SupermarketGuru.com, based in Los Angeles. Phil, this is important because there's a lot of candy that kids just do not want to get when they ring your doorbell.
Cisco, it's not only kids, but adults don't like it too. And in fact, CandyStore.com surveyed 30,000 of its customers to come up with this list of the 10 worst Halloween candies. But before we get to that, do you know what the number one most popular Halloween candy is?
No, what is it?
It's Reese's Peanut Butter Cups.
Yeah, I believe it. In fact, I was talking with Jeff Joniak about that the other day. I don't know anyone who doesn't love those.
Exactly. So you ready for the countdown?
Yeah, please.
With number 10?
Okay.
And any of these that you like, you can just make a sound and we'll take it off the list.
Yeah, I may not make any sounds here. I may agree with all of it. Let's see.
Okay. So the 10th worst Halloween candy, according to the survey, is Bit of Honey.
Yeah,
what
no.
do you think?
No. Those are bad.
Okay. Number 9, Good and Plenty.
Yeah. No way.
I like Good and Plenty. Okay.
And yet we still have you on our show. No, go ahead. Go.
Exactly. Okay. Well, it gets worse. Wait till you hear the other ones I like. Number 8 is licorice, black licorice.
Ah, yeah. See, strawberry's okay. No, black is terrible.
Okay. Number 7 is the package of Smarties, those little, circular, multicolored sweet things that hurt your teeth.
No, it's just sugar pills is all that it is.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
No way.
Okay. Number 6, this was a surprise to me, are Tootsie Rolls.
Oh, that's a local company. Tootsie Rolls are awesome.
Yeah, exactly.
We love those.
But the regular Tootsie Roll, not like the flavored ones that they have. I just like the regular ones.
Yeah, me too.
So number 5 is Necco Wafers.
No, those are like antacids. No, exactly. I don't like those at all.
Number 4, and I think that this one probably should be the worst, are those wax cola bottles. You remember as a kid, you'd get those little bottles that have like green, yellow, pink liquid in it. You'd bite off the top, and then you'd take whatever that liquid is, and then you'd chew on the wax.
Yeah, those are local too, though, Phil, so I'm going to have to say those should be off the list. I'm
okay.
A homer.
Okay. And number 3 are Peanut Butter Kisses.
Yeah, those are terrible. Okay, what's number 2?
Okay, number 2 are circus peanuts. You know, those yellow things that look like overgrown peanuts that are chewy and marshmallowy and
Yeah, just awful. Yeah, just awful. Yeah. I'm almost totally in agreement with this list. I wish I had a drum roll, but what's number one?
Number one, which is one of my favorites, is actually candy corn.
Candy corn are those are the worst, Phil. Those are the worst. And one of my best friends in the world the other day said they love candy corn. And
I do.
Our friendship is being put to the test now. I don't know.
I do too, because you can also just like put it over your teeth. And then you put like three or four over your teeth and you go up to somebody's door for trick or treat and, you know, your teeth are candy corn.
No, they're terrible.
No. Okay.
But we still like you, Phil, and I'll still be friends with you and my other good friend, too, in spite of your love of candy corn. And be sure and give out the whole candy bars tonight if you want to be popular on your blog.
Exactly.
Okay,
absolutely. Exactly. And happy Halloween.
Thank you, Phil. Happy Halloween. Always good to have you on the show. That's Phil Lempert, founder of SupermarketGuru.com.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.